Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Pavla Horáková and we start with the news. The Czech Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek has presented the policy agenda of his new government. At a news conference on Tuesday, Mr. Paroubek said that apart from carrying out the priorities of the previous cabinet, he would like to concentrate on the financial stabilisation of the healthcare sector and the support of exports and small and medium-sized business. Mr. Paroubek said the main objective of the cabinet was the ratification of the EU constitution in a referendum next year. The government will ask the lower house of parliament for confidence on Friday, and Prime Minister Paroubek says he expects to get all the 101 coalition votes in the lower house. On Monday, the Czech President Václav Klaus joined his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin and over 50 other world leaders for a ceremony in Moscow marking the victory over Nazi Germany. Some critics, including former President Václav Havel, have questioned the attendance of Central and Eastern European leaders, pointing out that the liberation from Nazi Germany by the Red Army resulted in several decades of authoritarian Soviet communist rule. During his visit to Moscow, President Václav Klaus expressed criticism at the fact that the former Polish President Wojciech Jaruzelski was among those who received medals from the Russian President Vladimir Putin on the occasion of the 60th anniversary of the end of the Second World War. Before leaving Moscow, President Klaus told President Putin that despite Mr. Jaruzelski's role in the defeat of Nazism, for Czech citizens he remained a symbol of the 1968 occupation of Czechoslovakia by Warsaw Pact troops. Wojciech Jaruzelski was Poland's defense minister when Polish units, along with Soviet, Hungarian, Bulgarian and East German troops, invaded Czechoslovakia in August 1968, putting an end to the reforms of the Prague Spring. Following his Moscow visit, President Klaus told reporters that his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, was planning a visit to the Czech Republic. Mr. Putin has never paid an official visit to the Czech Republic, and President Klaus did not rule out it might take place this year. Mr. Klaus also told reporters that the US President George W. Bush, who also took part in the celebrations, thanked him for the Czech involvement in the US-led operations in Afghanistan and Iraq. On to other news. The Vice President of the European Commission, Margot Wallström, who's on a visit to the Czech Republic, has presented her 10 arguments in favour of the adoption of the EU Constitution. The CTK news agency wrote that although she never mentioned the Czech President Václav Klaus, Ms. Wallström's 10 arguments came across as a response to Mr. Klaus's 10 objections to the EU constitution that he recently published. While Mr. Klaus warns that European countries will lose their right to create their own laws and the Czech Republic's decision-making power will be reduced, Ms. Wallström argues that the constitutional treaty will bring fairer and more efficient decision-making in the EU and will simplify its legal system. The Foreign Minister Cyril Svoboda will distribute tasks among his deputies only after the replacement in the post of his first deputy has taken place, a Foreign Ministry spokesman said on Monday. The current first deputy, Jan Winkler, is to be replaced by the Czech ambassador to Moscow, Jaroslav Bašta, of the Social Democrats. The nomination of Mr. Bašta was approved by the Social Democrat leadership on Friday. The filling of the post by the Social Democrats is considered of key importance by some of the party's members, who believe that this will ensure greater influence of the party on the country's foreign policy. Some Social Democrat MPs have made their support for the government of Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek in a confidence vote conditional on this move. And finally, a quick look at the weather. We can expect partly cloudy skies over the next couple of days, with daytime temperatures hovering around 13 degrees Celsius. I'm Pavla Horáková and that's the news.
This is Radio Prague, the International Service of Czech Public Radio, and I'm Brian Kennedy. In today's program, the government of Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek presents its policy agenda. President Václav Klaus objects to Russia bestowing honors on the former Polish leader, Wojciech Jaruzelski, and in this week's one-on-one.
And a lot of Czechs were afraid, in particular dealing with my mother, who was labeled as the imperialist British wife of a Czech traitor.
One-time Foreign Minister Jan Kavan speaks about his formative years. Stay tuned. On Tuesday morning, Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek presented the policy agenda of the new government, or should we say new old government, as all but four cabinet ministers from the previous government of Prime Minister Stanislav Gross remain in office, and the new governing coalition also consists of the same political parties as before, led by the Social Democrats. So, what are the priorities of this new old government? How do they differ from those of the previous government? Martin Mikulay, who has been following the situation, is here to answer those questions.
The new government of Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek says, in fact, it is not very different from the previous one. The cabinet ministers and coalition party leaders say they want to continue the policy line of the previous two social democratic governments led by social democrats, the government of Vladimír Špidla and of Stanislav Gross. However, now with the European Union member states that are supposed to hold referendums or vote in their national parliaments on the European Constitutional Treaty, Mr. Paroubek's government will be stressing its pro-European orientation perhaps even more. The Prime Minister has said that he would prefer to adopt the treaty in a referendum, and in the following weeks his cabinet will already start to work on an information campaign that would advise the people on how to vote in the referendum.
Chtěl bych říct si, že tato vláda preferuje přijetí té smlouvy o ústavě pro Evropu formou.
I want to say that this government wants to adopt the European Constitutional Treaty by a general referendum, and I presume that it could take place at the same time as the next general elections, that is, next year. Another very important issue that's been discussed a lot in recent weeks is the strategy of economic growth in the Czech Republic in the years 2005 to 2013. Based on this strategy, we'll elaborate other materials regarding the financial perspective of the European Union in the years 2007 to 2013.
Now, Martin, we've established the fact that this government of Jiří Paroubek is very pro-European. What are the chances that they will succeed in convincing people to vote in favor of the European Constitution?
Well, I think they look actually quite optimistic. Jiří Paroubek said he believes that the majority of Czechs are also pro-Eastern policy agenda in this respect.
Je potřeba, aby ve volební kampani voliči například občanské demokratické strany se od svých
It's necessary that the voters of the Civic Democrats learn from the party leaders what's their real attitude to the European Union. I know that 80% of their voters are in favor of the European Constitution, but the leadership of this party has a rather different policy. There are discrepancies in the policy of the Civic Democrats, and of course we want to point out that their policy is inconsistent and isn't credible. To point this out is the legitimate right of any government.
To je legitimní možnost a legitimní právo každé vlády.
Now, Martin, I would assume that the pro-European stress and the need to adopt the constitution, in their view, is not the only thing on the government policy agenda. What other priorities does this government have?
Well, of course, approving the European Constitutional Treaty is not the only point on the of the agenda. The document has 25 pages and lists all different fields of government policy. For example, they want to stabilize public finances, to lower the budget deficit in order to make the Czech Republic better prepared to adopt euro in the future. They are also preparing a system to support housing construction. They want to encourage export. There is a pension reform on the list. One of the major goals is also the reduction of unemployment, which is almost 9% right now. Here the Prime Minister made a very particular commitment and promised that it will be at least a half percent lower in the end of this term, that is next year.
Thank you, Martin. Of course, before this government can approve their policy agenda, they have to pass a vote of confidence. That's coming up on Friday, May 13th. Stay tuned. Now, the eyes of the world were on Moscow on Monday, where 50 world leaders hailed the defeat of Nazi Germany 60 years ago. But the post-war division of Europe throws a long shadow, and behind the smiles and handshakes, not everyone saw eye to eye on everything. Czech President Václav Klaus openly criticized the fact that one of the Second World War heroes being awarded for his role in helping to defeat Nazism was the former Polish President Wojciech Jaruzelski. Daniela Lazarova has the story.
A hero or a villain For some, Wojciech Jaruzelski is a hero who fearlessly led a Polish unit within the Red Army to help defeat Nazi Germany. For others, he is a symbol of communist oppression, the man whom Moscow handpicked to quell the Solidarity movement, the man who instituted martial law in Poland and ordered the arrest of Solidarity leader Lech Wałęsa. And in the eyes of Czechs, the man who symbolized the 1968 invasion of Czechoslovakia and the crushing of the Prague Spring Reform Movement. President Václav Klaus conveyed his reservations to Russian President Vladimir Putin, and President Klaus's office issued a public statement explaining why the Czech president felt that Mr. Jaruzelski should not have been thus honored. Although there are some who would dispute the Czech Republic's right to say who Russia should give its awards to, many Czech top officials have openly supported President Klaus's view. Foreign Minister Cyril Svoboda said that if the decision were in his hands, he would not have given Mr. Jaruzelski the award, and Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek said that he understood the president's criticism of Moscow. Earlier today, I spoke with Michael Kubicki of Radio Polonia to find out how Poles themselves felt about this high distinction for their former head of state.
This was, of course, commented at length in the discussion on President Kwaśniewski's visit to Moscow yesterday. And here in Poland, it's only the president who went to Moscow, as you know, and leaders of the Democratic Left Alliance of former communists, who say that there's nothing wrong in honoring General Jaruzelski. But if we take a look at the major dailies, the opposition politicians, and also most analysts, they see this as another in a series of moves by Moscow to quite simply humiliate Poland. I mean, President Putin's address didn't contain a word about Poland's role in the Allied coalition in the war, and In the final account, a medal awarded to Jaruzelski was the only visible sign, as it were, of Poland's presence. An interesting point, I suppose, is that a prominent expert on Eastern policy said in a television panel last night that it's in a way a disgrace for Poland's political elite that it was the Czech president who expressed his criticism of honoring General Jaruzelski, and not any of prominent Polish politicians.
Daniela Lazarova reporting. And now it's time for Czech science. Our environment contains all kinds of more or less dangerous chemicals. Sorry to be the one to tell you. Some of them have even reached as far as the Arctic Circle and the South Pole, the highest mountain peaks and deepest seas. The Czech branch of the environmental group Greenpeace didn't have to go quite so far to prove that we live in a contaminated world. Jarka Halkova reports.
The Greenpeace analysis looked at ordinary house dust from the offices of three well-known people, the actor Jaroslav Dušek, the head of health officer Michal Vít, and senator Jaroslav Štětina. The result? The dust samples contained four different kinds of chemicals. Dr. Miroslav Šuta is a specialist on toxic material.
We found many danger chemicals, for example, brominated flame retardants, chlorinated paraffins, alkyl phenols, and phthalates.
All these chemicals are toxic, take long to diffuse, and therefore stay in the environment for a long time. That means there is a good chance they can affect our health. One such kind of chemical, phthalates, when present in a human body, may cause a hormonal system disorder, asthma or allergies. The others can have a dangerous impact on skeletal development, the brain and so the nervous system, and may cause cancer. The chemicals that Greenpeace found in these Czech homes are used in the production of toys, cosmetics, computers, phones, cleaning products and other things used on a daily basis. Dr. Miroslav Šuta says there is a solution how to reduce our exposure to such chemicals at home.
One solution is replacing one chemical by other chemicals. It's possible to change material, for example, something from PVC. It's possible to produce from metal or wood or other plastics. If we redesign electronics, for example, computers or monitors for computers or cell phones. Many big companies, big names like IKEA or Nokia, on voluntary basis agreed with Greenpeace and consumers consumer organization for phase-outing many of danger chemicals.
Europe is the biggest producer of chemicals and it also has the biggest chemical market. There are more than 70,000 chemicals for sale and very little is known about the toxicity of three quarters of them. Greenpeace has been calling for a Europe-wide new regulation system that would protect the environment and health. New regulations are being discussed by responsible European Union organizations. A new system called REACH, an acronym that means to register, evaluate and authorize chemicals, is now in place. Dr. Miroslav Šuta.
They have two important purposes. One is to collect data about chemicals because thousands and thousands of chemicals are produced without enough information about human health and environmental aspects. And second is substitution of danger chemicals like we analyzed in house dust.
But the strict rules that should come in effect in 2007 are not popular among producers of chemicals. They are neither in favor of concealing information about chemicals nor of avoiding the controlled use of dangerous chemicals. REACH estimates the system could prevent some 4,300 cases of cancer and save hundreds of millions of euros in health costs.
Jarka Halkova reporting. And from toxic dust bunnies, we now move on to the Czech singer and violinist Iva Bitová, who's often described as one of the most remarkable personalities in Czech music, and she's gaining more and more fans also among foreign audiences. 2 years ago, she was among the nominees in the BBC Radio 3 World Music Awards, and last year she made a number of appearances in the United States. Following another two gigs in Philadelphia and at New York's Carnegie Hall last month, Iva Bitová is now set to release an album in the United States. Pavla Horáková has more.
The album, which is due out in June, will feature Iva Bitová's new project called Elida. The project is supported by the management of Carnegie Hall, which, after Bitová's successful rendition of the character of Donna Elvira in David Chambers' adaptation of Mozart's Don Giovanni, chose to show the Czech multi-talented artist in her own project with the Bang on a Can All-Stars Band. Iva Bitová, who describes her style as my own personal folk music, says she discovered Elida when looking for inspiration for her new music. Elida is a poem by the Czech poet Věra Chase, who writes in English. Bitová says she first chose the poem because she found it very provocative and erotic, and only later did she realize it was an ode to an old-fashioned brand of soap our grandmothers used to like. A Czech re-release of the US album is scheduled for August, and Iva Bitová and Bang on a Can All-Stars are expected to play three concerts in the Czech Republic and Slovakia.
Pavla Horáková. A reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, where it's now time for our weekly interview program, One-on-One. Ian Willoughby's guest this week is the controversial Czech politician Jan Kavan, who recalls his parents' struggle to adjust to life in communist Czechoslovakia after a diplomatic posting in London.
Jan Kavan is one of the most interesting figures in Czech society of recent decades. The son of a communist politician sentenced in the Slansky show trials of the early 1950s, he himself spent decades in Britain as a leading figure in Czech émigré circles. After his return in 1989, Mr. Kavan was accused of having collaborated with the secret police, but cleared his name and later became foreign minister and was president of the United Nations General Assembly. In the first half of this two-part interview, Jan Kavan told me about his family.
My mother was English and she met my father during the war. After the war, my father was appointed to the Czechoslovak embassy in London, and therefore myself and my year younger brother, we were born in London. In 1950, when my father was recalled by the Czech Foreign Office back to Prague, the whole family for the first time came to Czechoslovakia. And of course, from the high position of an important diplomat and a decorated soldier officer, he suddenly was accused of being a traitor and an imperialist Zionist agent and imprisoned and sentenced first to life, and then it was commuted to 25 years imprisonment.
In those days, there weren't many foreigners here, I'm sure. Now there are lots of us. And I'm curious how your mother found adjusting to life in Czechoslovakia in the 50s.
It was extremely difficult because, as you said, foreigners are now used to Prague, and Prague was used to seeing many foreigners. In the 50s, there were very few. And some of those who came here as wives of Czech soldiers left again when the life here became very difficult during the Stalinist 50s. And a lot of Czechs were afraid, in particular dealing with my mother, who was labeled as the imperialist British wife of a Czech traitor. So she couldn't find a job, eventually worked as a laborer in a factory, and even from that she was eventually expelled. So life was extremely difficult for her while her husband, my father, was in prison, and she had to find a living to keep me and my brother and herself alive. But she was a very strong character, and she survived. And I have still, and thanks to her sense of humor and strength, despite all the objective tough conditions of the 50s, I still have relatively warm memories of my childhood.
As you say, your father was imprisoned and he died young, I know. You yourself briefly became a member of the Communist Party before you were kicked out. Why did you join the party, considering what they had done to him?
Because in the 60s, when I was growing up as a student, the Communist Party had a total political monopoly. So you basically had a choice of either ignoring politics and deciding that the whole political life is so corrupt and dirty and supervised by a hostile force that the best way is to find some very non-political way of living, so that one can look at one's face in the mirror in the morning without feeling ashamed. One possibility, and many people have chosen that, and sometimes they described it as a kind of internal exile. The other possibility, as we saw it, rightly or wrongly, was to join the Communist Party and work within the Communist Party with the reformist wing, which from middle 60s was quite well known and obvious, and therefore one knew with whom one wanted to work. And I strongly believed that what eventually culminated in the so-called Prague Spring, an attempt to form a socialism with human face, kind of reformist communism, I believe that those ideas are worth helping. I was given a party task to restrict the influence of the radical student group, of which I was myself a member. So it was a stupid, if not frustrating, an impossible task. And within a few months, I was expelled precisely because I continued to support the radical student group.
When the Prague Spring was crushed by the Soviets, you went to England the following year?
That's correct. I went to England in the spring 1969, after being in England, in fact, briefly at the time of the invasion, immediately after the invasion. But I then returned back to Prague, hoping that I could help my colleagues, the radical students, and the emerging resistance movement to stop making concessions to the occupying forces. But when the reformist government led by Dubček was finally crushed in the spring 1969, and the so-called normalization, as they called the onslaught of totalitarian measures against all the reformists and their supporters, started in spring 69, it became virtually impossible for me to function. I was expelled from the university, so I emigrated to London.
And in London, you were very active in Czech emigre circles. Could you tell us, please, about your activities in London?
Yes, when I arrived in London, besides joining university, my main activities centered on trying to help the emerging Czech clandestine opposition. In fact, I followed a kind of a rule, a message, which I received at the time from my friends from Prague, saying, stay abroad because you could be more helpful to us outside and inside, given these new conditions, and meet our needs as we define them, which they defined as first books, all the way to duplicating machines, eventually video recorders, financial support for persecuted dissidents, etc. I was basically trying during those 20 years to meet all those needs. And in order to do so, I established a press and literary agency called Palach Press, and eventually established a charity called Jan Palach Research and Information Trust, and also later, together with my Polish and Hungarian friends, established a charity called East European Cultural Foundation, which, beside helping these dissident activities throughout, and I stress throughout Central Eastern Europe, not only in our three countries, was also publishing a prestigious quarterly called East European Reporter, which became the main source of authentic information to the West from East European dissident sources. And I was basically doing that all the time until November 89, when as a first Czech re-emigre, as they called it, returned back to Prague.
Jan Kavan. Next week, in the second part of our interview, he talks about accusations he collaborated with the secret police and other controversies which have dogged him over the years.
Ian Willoughby's guest in One-on-One was the Czech MP Jan Kavan. And that just about brings us to the end of today's program. For all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening. You can always drop us a line at english@radio.cz. And we leave you now with a taste of the unmistakable style of Czech singer and violinist Iva Bitova with Paruskeva. I hope I'm saying that right. It means peach in Russian.
V zahradě sedí svatá Paruskeva a zpívá. V zahradě sedí svatá Paruskeva a zpívá. Zo, tu, du, a šum, tu, du, a šum, zo, tu, du, a šum, zo, tu, tu, du, a šum, du, a šum, zo, tu, tu, du, a šum. Zo, tu, du, a šum, tu, du, a šum, zo, tu, du, a šum. Zo, tu, tu, du, a šum, du, a šum, zo, tu, tu, du, a šum.
Posloucháte Rádio Praha. Vysílá